This white paper applies Humberto Maturana's biological systems framework to analyze the governance and ecological implications of the proposed Destiny Special Sustainability Zone in Nevis, arguing forcefully for democratic disclosure and systemic safeguards. The material is incredibly well-researched and philosophically profound, making an exceptionally strong case for the island's sovereignty. So let's look closely at how we can sharpen this brilliant foundation to maximize its pragmatic impact on policymakers and citizens alike.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, jumping right in, I think we have to start with how the paper uses that biological framework.
The Maturana-informed framework of autopoiesis provides a profound philosophical lens for analyzing island sovereignty, yet its dense biological terminology risks alienating the pragmatic policymakers and citizens who urgently need to act on these recommendations.
Right. Autopoiesis. It's a brilliant concept, but definitely heavy.
Exactly. So the weakness here is that the text devotes a significant portion of Section 5 to complex biological concepts like structural coupling and world bringing.
Yeah, which is fascinating, but...
But while it's intellectually rigorous, this creates a really jarring tonal shift immediately following the very grounded legal analysis of the SSS Act.
Oh, completely. The weakness is that practical stakeholders, you know, government officials, union leaders, or local business owners, might just get bogged down in the academic theory of living systems.
Right.
And if they get bogged down, they miss the immediate vital warnings about enclave risks and legal exceptionalism.
So what's the suggestion to bridge that gap?
Well, the suggestion is to translate the biological metaphors into direct political and legal realities, blending the philosophical why with the pragmatic how.
I like that. Do you have any concrete examples of what that translation looks like on the page?
Yeah, definitely. So for concrete examples, the author could create a Maturana in practice sidebar or a translation table right at the end of Section 5.
Oh, a translation table is a great idea.
Right. For example, explicitly map the biological concept of boundary intelligence to the legal necessity of enforceable environmental red lines.
So they can see the exact real-world equivalent?
Exactly. And another concrete example would be tweaking the text itself. Instead of just writing that development only succeeds through structural coupling, add a grounded addendum.
Like what?
Like adding, which in legal terms means co-designing the environmental impact assessments with the local fishers and farmers whose livelihoods are directly coupled to the reef.
Oh, wow. That makes it so much more tangible. So a key theme running through this material seems to be framing the island as a living organism rather than just like a vacant asset on the spreadsheet.
Yeah, and that's clearly laid out. I wonder, though, if we've considered the policymaker test.
The policymaker test?
Yeah, I mean, if an overwhelmed legislator has 10 minutes to read this, will terms like autopoiesis clarify their mandate or obscure it?
Right, it's a valid question. It's kind of like handing a structural engineer a beautiful poem about a house instead of the blueprints.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
I mean, both are extremely valuable, but the engineer needs to know exactly where the load-bearing walls are if they're going to build the thing.
Exactly. You need the philosophical foundation, but you have to show them the load-bearing walls.
Okay, so let's shift gears to the evidentiary issue.
The paper rightly anchors its central argument on the missing Destiny Development Agreement, but repeatedly stating its absence throughout the various risk domains dilutes the urgency and transforms a critical alarm bell into a repetitive echo.
Yeah, it really does.
The weakness here is that across the 12 domains of life-coherent evaluation, the text frequently reiterates the evidentiary limitation that the operative legal instrument is hidden.
Right, they keep pointing out that the document isn't public.
Exactly. And while true, continually saying we don't know because the document isn't public inadvertently stalls the analytical momentum.
It sort of leaves the reader in a state of suspended animation, right? Rather than actively assessing the potential threats.
Yes, precisely. So the suggestion is to consolidate the missing agreement narrative into a powerful predictive risk matrix that forecasts specific worst-case and best-case scenarios based on regional precedents, using the absence of the document as a tool for active risk assessment.
Okay, I really like the idea of a predictive risk matrix, What would be some concrete examples of that?
Well, for concrete examples, the author could dedicate a specific section utilizing the Honduras Prospera controversy that's already briefly mentioned in the text.
Right, the special economic zone issue.
Yeah. They could build a clear, if this, then that scenario model.
How would that look?
Like scenario A, enclave risk. If the hidden agreement includes investor-state arbitration, Nevis risks catastrophic fiscal exposure.
Okay, and then you'd contrast that?
Exactly. Contrast it with scenario B, life coherent risk mitigation. If the agreement explicitly preserves ordinary domestic court jurisdiction, sovereignty is maintained.
Oh, that's sharp. Another concrete example of this approach could be framing the missing document not just as a lack of information, but as a deliberate strategic void that citizens must demand to fill before the SSC Act, notwithstanding clauses, are triggered.
Yeah, you turn the missing information into a weapon.
As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that without the agreement, citizens are basically being asked to consent to a ghost.
That makes sense. But could the evidence also support a more aggressive analytical posture?
What do you mean?
Like, is there a risk that focusing solely on the absence of the document overlooks the opportunity to model exactly what toxic clauses typically hide in the shadows of Caribbean special economic zones?
Ah, I see what you're saying. It's like a prosecutor repeatedly telling a jury the murder weapon is missing, when they should instead be showing the jury the size and shape of the bullet hole to prove exactly what kind of weapon must have been used.
Exactly. Show them the bullet hole. Model the threat.
That's a really powerful way to reposition that section. Let's move on to the final part of the critique regarding the proposed solutions.
The proposed 9-phase covenant redesign process is a highly ethical and comprehensive ideal, but its sheer scale and sequential demands risk overwhelming local stakeholders who are operating under rapid legislative and developer timelines.
Yeah, it's a massive, massive plan.
The weakness is that the culmination of the paper is this extensive process requiring a citizens' assembly, comprehensive Escazú-grade public participation, and an island listening phase.
Which, you know, sounds incredible on paper.
It is democratically beautiful. But proposing this massive institutional undertaking all at once might lead pragmatic officials to dismiss the paper as utopian or practically unfeasible given the immediate momentum of the Destiny proposal.
Right, because developers move fast. So what is the suggestion to make this actionable?
The suggestion is to restructure the redesign process into a tiered, escalating timeline of immediate emergency safeguards versus long-term institutional reforms, giving policymakers actionable off-ramps right now.
Okay, breaking it into tiers makes a lot of sense. What are some concrete examples of those tiers?
For concrete examples, the author could group phases 1 and 2, which focus on paused and disclosure, into a next 30 days action plan.
Okay, so what exactly do they do in those 30 days?
Suggest drafting a simple interim memo of public trust that the Nevis Island administration could sign immediately to legally bind a 90-day pause.
Oh, wow. Just a straightforward memo.
Yeah, exactly. And then another concrete example is grouping the heavier lifts, like the Citizens Assembly and cultural co-governance, which are phases 4 and 9, into a next 12 months structural reform category.
That's a great way to handle it. This allows leaders to adopt the paper's immediate safety brakes without feeling like they have to completely rebuild the island's democratic apparatus overnight.
Right, because rebuilding it takes time.
Okay, so what I really like about this part is the absolute commitment to bringing every single voice to the table, from youth to elders. It's so comprehensive.
It is. Building on that point, though, what if we looked at it from the perspective of an administration under immense financial pressure to secure foreign direct investment?
Right. They're looking at the budget.
Yeah. Does a 9-step deliberative process sound like a lifeline or a legislative roadblock to them?
Oh, definitely a roadblock. I mean, handing an overwhelmed government a 9-step democratic overhaul is like pitching a 5-year diet and exercise plan to someone currently experiencing a heart attack.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
They need the defibrillator first, which is the immediate pause and release of the document, and the holistic health plan second.
Right. You have to stabilize the patient before you can focus on long-term wellness.
Well, this has been an incredibly insightful dive into the material. This critique highlighted the incredible depth and ethical clarity of the white paper while focusing on 3 key areas for structural enhancement.
Yeah. First,
translating the biological autopoiesis framework into pragmatic policy terms.
Right. And second, weaponizing the missing development agreement through predictive scenario modeling instead of just repeating that it's missing.
And third, tiering the 9-step covenant redesign process into immediate and long-term actionable phases.
Exactly. By grounding the philosophy, modeling the hidden risks, and pacing the solutions, this document can evolve from a brilliant academic warning into an undeniable legislative roadmap. We invite the author to implement these structural shifts and submit the revised material back to this critique for further exploration.